From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, big tech takes a hit in Washington, and your religious liberties are at stake. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Reagan Republican, and Christ follower. Well, we're almost 3 weeks out from the election, and there's still so much up in the air. But with the social media site Parler growing at an astronomical rate, big tech giants like Twitter and Facebook are still center stage. In fact, there was another Senate hearing this week with the tech giants, and we'll start off today's show with this from Senator Josh Hawley during the hearing.
In the late 19th century, the heads of the biggest corporations in America, the robber barons, got together and they set rates, they set prices, they determined how they would control information flow, they determined how they get rid of competition, and I'll be darned if we aren't right back there again. Except for this time, you're the robber barons. Your companies are the most powerful companies in the world, and I want to talk about how you're coordinating together to control information.
Well, joining me now to talk about what came forward in yesterday's hearing is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who chaired yesterday's hearing, U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you. It was fascinating to sit there. And I did have more questions than answers.
Well, so are they the new robber barons?
Well, they have control over information flow unlike any group in the history of the world. They're a television station, they're a radio station, they're a publisher. They're all these things combined because we, the public, use their services. And here's the question. At what point is it in the public interest to allow folks to sue when they feel like they're wronged, which you can't do today, or provide regulation over how they engage in business? They're the only people I know of, Tony, that can't be sued and live under no regulatory scheme. Now, your program is licensed by the government. You buy spectrum. You have rules of the road. If you slander somebody on your program, they can sue the station, not just you. On social media outlets, you have no recourse. If they take your content down because they don't like your post or don't like your Facebook video, you have no recourse against them. And all these things need to be on the table.
They do. But you put something else on the table, which I found intriguing. As I watched the hearing, and it's one that I've actually had experience in as a legislator on another subject matter, but it was the addiction of social media. Yes. I dealt with addiction of gambling as a legislator in Louisiana, and there is a science behind that that draws people in, and it is a public health issue. I thought it was very interesting that you brought that point forward about social media.
Okay, so big tobacco. During World War II, the government would provide cigarettes to the troops because it was a socially accepted, product. And we learned later on that the tobacco companies understood it was addictive and had health hazards associated with it. And so thus, we now regulate tobacco. My question is, do the social media outlets, do they have the ability to make their product addictive? And the answer is yes. If you've seen the movie Social Dilemma, it's a pretty good expose about how they can manipulate getting you to go back to your phone and go back to these sites. And the question was, do you believe that your product, Facebook and others, has an addictive element? All the medical research seems to suggest that particularly for younger people, it becomes very addictive and very destructive. So I'm going to continue to pursue this line of thinking as to whether or not we need to regulate these social media outlets from a public health point of view and their business practices.
Well, when you combine the two issues that you were focusing on yesterday in the hearing, if there's an addictive nature where you draw people in and this becomes the source of their information, and then you control what information you allow in and what viewpoints you allow them to see, that is, borrowing from Senator Cruz's comments yesterday, that's a recipe for a totalitarian regime.
Yeah, I think so. And when you look at it this way, number one, you have a Twitter site probably, or maybe, I don't know, maybe you've left Twitter, but you have a Facebook page. These technologies have enriched our lives in many ways, but there's the dark side of it. There's the addictive nature of it. Sexual predators are out there all over social media. And we have a bill called the Earn It Act, where you take away Section 230 liability protections against social media outlets unless they harden their sites against child exploitation, sexual exploitation. In other words, they have to earn their protection. We have the same concept for terrorism. Terrorists use these media sites to incite others to their cause. So what I'm looking at is trying to come up with best business practices. What should social media outlets be doing in terms of making it less addictive? How do they control the flow of terrorism and child sexual exploitation? What kind of oversight do we have regarding who they put down and take up when it comes to content? And come up with a system, maybe self-regulated with government auditing. I don't want the government to pick and choose what we say, but these companies have the power of government in many ways, and something's got to give.
Right. I mean, I'm not, and I know you're in the same position, and most of the Republicans on the committee, same position. You know, we're not for big government overreach.
Right.
I mean, we're not for, you know, I'm not a big fan of having every fast food restaurant you go into, the calories next to the big Double Mac cheeseburger or whatever it is. You know,
right.
I'd rather not know how many calories I'm going to consume.
Or the
mayor of New York telling you can only have a drink of 16 ounces, not 32 ounces, you know. But we're talking about something I think long term is not only, as you've pointed out, with the addiction aspects of this, it is causing mental illness, according to researchers, in young people. So you've got a health component here, but then you have an information component that long term does tremendous damage to our republic and to the education of our citizens.
When you look at where people get their news, more and more people are turning to social media sites like Facebook. They don't tune in to the nightly news and other traditional sources like newspapers are dying, right? So when a social media site puts a flag on your post or takes down your video or, you know, censors what you have to say, then that's an editorial decision like a paper. Like the New York Post decided to print an expose about Hunter Biden's relationship in the Ukraine. Well, both Twitter and Facebook decided to stop dissemination of that of those articles. So if that's not editorial control, I don't know what would be. So should they be treated like a publisher, like an editor? Should they have a regulatory scheme? Because the key word here is manipulation. It's one thing for you to go in by a big gulp, if that's what you want to do. It's another thing for a company to be able to manipulate the content of what you see, how you see it, when you see it, and to use their product to get you to see it in a way you don't realize you're being manipulated.
Right.
So this is the world in which we live in children. You know, your program focuses on the family. Let me tell you, social media can enrich the family. It can be the darkest force for your children, and we've got to get a grip on this.
But the first step is, number one, uncovering what is actually taking place, and that is a part of what these hearings were doing. Let me just ask you this question. Is there any question that these big tech giants, talking about Twitter and Facebook, are engaging in censorship? Is there any question that they're doing?
Well, there's no doubt that, I mean, they will say that they're flagging content. You know, this is not true. Our fact checkers say it's not true. They'll take down a post because they think, okay, here's the question. This posting violates our community standards. This posting failed our fact check. Well, here's the question. Who sets your community standards, and who does the fact checking? So the question for all of us is, do we feel like the community standards they're using represents our community? And that's why I want to know more about what community standards mean and who does the fact checking.
So based on what you've seen, what you've heard in your committee, is there any question that this censorship has a bias against conservative viewpoints?
No question that, you know, where are all these companies located? Okay, they're located in California. 99% of their political givings to Democrats. The Democrats, here's the odd thing about the hearing, they wanted them to do more. They wanted them to take more content down. And Republicans were worried about them having power over content. So you had Democrats very upset with them for a completely different reason, that they weren't doing enough to deal with what they consider hate speech. And our concern was that they're using community standards and fact-checking in a liberal bias way, that we don't get a fair shake. Now, what would fix all this? If you could sue, if they took your content down, they would think twice about taking it down. If you could create a system where you gave them guidance, and if they ran afoul of the guidance, you could sue, that would change your behavior. There's two things I've learned as a lawyer and as a politician. If people feel like they can't be sued and they can't be regulated at all, there is no downside, that's a pretty hard thing. That's the Wild Wild West.
Right.
That's what we have now.
Yeah. Well, one final question for you, Senator, and sure. Because this, we could do a whole program on this question I'm going to ask you, and we only got 2 minutes left. Yeah. But we talk about liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat divide. Are we, I mean, what my 25 years, and you've been in this a little bit longer,
but
I see the two sides moving farther and farther apart.
Well, so there's elements in the Democratic Party that are destroying your grandparents' Democratic Party. Here's the odd thing. Donald Trump has brought the Republican Party together with your libertarian, sort of a national security type guy like me and you. Mm-hmm. No matter who you are, you know, Chamber of Commerce type, Trump has been great on pro-life issues. He's been great for business. So the odd thing is that the Republican Party is more united today than I can remember.
Right.
The Democratic Party is about to fracture in two or three camps. And here's the question for Biden. If you want to find common ground on fixing a broken immigration system, dealing with Section 230, building roads, bridges, and highways and ports, I will meet you in the middle. But if the goal is to transform America like the Squad, no way. So
yeah.
he's riding a wild tiger. And how he manages this is yet to be determined if he wins.
We will we'll be watching.
You can find out more about Senator Graham as well as our Stand Firm app when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy of Man to Man wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkow. With former Vice President Biden already making plans for his potential administration, many groups are already demanding that he do their bidding. One of those is the Human Rights Campaign, and they want Biden to deny accreditation to Christian colleges and schools for their stance on LGBTQ issues. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about it is the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Dr. Moeller, welcome to the program.
Tony, as always, it's good to be with you. These are critical days.
They are. And by the way, congratulations. Today you were elected president of the Evangelical Theological Society. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you. I hope to serve well. There are few things more important in our view than keeping evangelical theology evangelical.
Well, quite frankly, if you get the theology right, most of the other things fall in place. If we are anchored to the truth, we're going to end up in the right place. But let's talk about the Human Rights Campaign. In fact, I've got a clip I want to play to set the stage for this, because this is not, you know, some group out there that is advocating for some radical policy that does not have the ear of Joe Biden. Joe Biden has been in front of this group, the Human Rights Campaign, on many occasions. And as you'll hear, he sees them as an ally and us as the enemy. Bobby, play that clip.
Despite losing in the courts and in the court of public opinion, these forces of intolerance remain determined to undermine and roll back the progress you all have made. This time, they, not you, have an ally in the White House. This time, they have an ally. They're a small percentage of the American people, virulent people, some of them the dregs of society. And instead of using the full might of the executive branch to secure justice, dignity, safety for all, The president uses the White House as a literal bully pulpit, callously exerting his power over those who have little or none.
Again, that was Joe Biden speaking at the gala of the Human Rights Campaign. Dr. Mueller, sounds like they're pretty close.
Yeah, you have an administration that if there is a Biden administration, it will be, by Joe Biden's own pledge, the most LGBTQ positive administration in American history. And, you know, at the very least, we know what their game plan is. But I'm astounded, Tony, at how clear and candid they are. I think it's like discovering the German battle plans for the invasion of France. We've been told exactly what they intend in terms of stripping Christian schools of accreditation. It's a fundamental assault upon religious liberty. And the Human Rights Campaign is the organization behind this plan.
And the media is talking all about this, right?
Not a peep.
Ah, interesting.
In fact, I had no idea of this until I went deeply into the document myself and found that paragraph. And it was like reading the invasion plan before the invasion.
Well, let's talk about it. And it does a multitude of things, because this is their kind of wish list. And it basically counters everything that the Trump administration has done to protect religious freedom, both here and abroad. But one of the things, in just talking about you being elected to the Evangelical Theological Society, the importance of religious education and being true to Scripture, this is a direct assault on the ability of institutions of higher learning to do so from a religious perspective. And explain why.
Yeah, you know, Tony, it's insidious, because it kind of reflects the fact that there is a recognition that at least Christian colleges, it's religion, as you know, in general, that will be covered here. But the vast majority are Christian colleges, seminaries, Christian schools, including K-12. There's at least the recognition here that our schools would have a real constitutional case to make on religious liberty grounds if they tried to just shut us down from operating. So what's insidious here is this is a go-round. This is what I haven't seen in black and white print ever before. And it is that they want to coerce the Biden administration to use the power of executive orders through the Department of Education to deny any school that stands against the LGBTQ revolution. And by the way, and very insidiously, the language they use, to strip our schools of accreditation. And again, there are Christians who would say, well, no big deal. But they don't understand that accreditation has everything to do with whether your school can accept students from the GI Bill, whether or not your school can participate in federal student aid programs. My school does not, by the way, but hundreds of Christian schools do. And whether or not your degrees and credits will be recognized to transfer to another institution, or your graduates able to apply to a graduate program elsewhere. It's a direct assault.
I mean, this is further trying to isolate and marginalize Christian religious institutions, because, as you said, this will put them outside the realm of being able to communicate and work with. For instance, I had my undergraduate degree from Liberty University. Under this, yep. If they're successful, Liberty would lose its accreditation. And when I did my master's work at Louisiana State University, they would not recognize my undergraduate work.
No, absolutely. And they know exactly how accreditation works. And that's what's so sly. And then they say two grounds. Very interesting, Tony, because this tells us what worldview conflict we're facing. The first was, you know, to deny the ability to deny accreditation to any religious school that discriminates. Now, again, that means for Christian colleges, housing, admissions, hiring of faculty, and student life. In other words, you'd have to recognize same-sex marriage. You'd have to recognize homosexuality as a legitimate lifestyle for students. You'd have to hire without regard to a Christian understanding of sexuality. And, of course, the T in transgender means also on gender. But then they add any school that does not accept modern science. And that's an insidious term these days anyway. But what they mean by that is, especially when it comes to, you know, sexual identity and gender identity, that means that if we don't accept the rebellion against the created order that's demanded of the LGBTQ activists, then we'll be stripped of accreditation. It's the further you look at this document, the more you realize It really is diabolical.
When I saw that, Dr. Moland, I said, you know, when we don't accept the science. And I'm thinking, who is it that's not accepting the science, the biological reality that there are two sexes, male and female? They're the ones denying it. But what they've done is they've bullied and strong-armed all of these medical societies and, you know, all of these, you know, the psychological associations to embrace what they're pushing so that they've normalized what has long been seen as abnormal.
Yeah, and so you've got doctors on the one hand over here acting like they completely buy into this nonsense of the modern transgender revolutionaries. But, you know, Tony, they haven't found a way around the fact you need sperm and an egg to get a baby. In other words, they have to say on the one hand this and contradict it on the other hand. You cannot join this revolution against the creation order and still produce babies, for example.
Right. So, Dr. Moland, you said this is like finding the Germans' war plans. And I agree with you. I think, look, and this is the problem. Number one, people aren't paying attention. I think there's a lot of people focused on the election contest, and so they're not looking to see what Biden is proposing, who he's putting into his cabinet. But secondly, there's this idea, oh, they're not going to do that. They won't do it. I'm here to tell you, they will. I think we need to start believing what we see. And so with that in mind, what is the posture that the church should be in when we look at what is ahead under what might be a Harris-Biden administration?
You know, Tony, by the way, this just points to the fact that President Trump did exactly do what he said he would do in executive orders. And frankly, the left was shocked by it, which is the reason why I think you have these leftist organizations putting out these lists right now, because they're basically saying to Joe Biden, you know, we're expecting the very same thing from you. And so it's attributed to the fact that President Trump followed through on his promises, that there are executive orders in place that that the left opposes. But you asked the right question. What do we do now? Well, number one, knowledge is power. We got to know what's going on. I mean, if the enemy does have a war plan against you, you have no excuse if it's handed to you and not dealing with it. We need to inform Christians about this, which is why I appreciate what you're doing right now. And you do this every day. I think we've got to understand that Christians are going to have to pay a price in order to defend religious liberty. And I think American Christians have always thought this is something coming. But, you know, it's here.
Yeah.
It's here in text. It's just been given to us.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important. This is not theoretical. And I'm here to tell you that they have closely watched what the Trump administration has done, and they're trying to counter every step that they took. For instance, they're looking at the State Department and the commission that Secretary Pompeo put together on unalienable rights, which really kind of cleared the deck and went back to the core of what is a fundamental human right, not these make-believe rights that, you know, people were able to strong arm their way through. But what is at its core, which is revolutionary, quite frankly, in going back to that foundation, they want to very quickly cover all of this up.
You know, you got your finger right on something absolutely crucial. Secretary of State Pompeo and that Commission on Unalienable Rights did an incredibly brave thing. He actually, on behalf of the State Department, said, let's identify what are really the human rights that God's given, that our Constitution recognizes, that we want to fight for every person on the planet and every country on Earth. And that clearly, you know, revealed the fact that there are these newly invented rights that are artificial. They're merely declared by courts. They have no basis in the creation order. They have no basis in constitutional history. And look, the left is in sheer panic over this because they've had all these artificial rights they've been putting forth for years. And you know, I appreciate Secretary of State Pompeo having the courage to say those aren't real. And by the way, this group claims an international consensus. Well, you and I both know right now that if there's an international consensus on issues of human sexuality and marriage, it's not what the Human Rights Campaign represents.
No, not at all, except with maybe a few countries in Western Europe, not many. The opposite is true. In fact, as I've met with leaders from different countries, it was like a sigh of relief from what the Trump administration was focusing on in their foreign policy, for instance, religious freedom, as opposed to abortion, and, you know, this new view of human sexuality that they were forcing on many of these countries that were deeply opposed to this based on religious grounds. I mean, I think we've reached a point in our society, Dr. Moeller, and I want to ask you for your opinion on this. But my take is that we've become, it's kind of like the parable of the wheat and the tares. There's not much in between. We've got the wheat and we've got the tares. And when we see in this, if this transition takes place, such a stark contrast and what all the good that was done, there's going to be this quick move to undo it and move the other direction. And if we have the opportunity, I think the direction would be the opposite in 4 years. It's just like this ping pong match back and forth.
Yeah, you know, the left plays a very long game. And the left has been winning, I would argue, for the better part of the the last 50 years on the cultural and moral issues. You just look whether it's marijuana or same-sex marriage or whatever. And so they're working hard to try to ensure by their goals that the 4-year Trump administration was a temporary interruption in mm-hmm. otherwise unimpeded liberal progress.
Yeah.
You know, the
yeah.
issues you were just talking about and your involvement in religious liberty around the world. I mean, you had President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton who said they did. They made LGBTQ issues a matter of American foreign policy. And the Biden administration's now going to, if they have the opportunity, they're going to come in and do that at warp speed.
Yes.
And yeah. and I think most American conservative Christians just don't have any idea how all of the things that they've celebrated for the last 4 years, they're all endangered, and many of them can be reversed in fairly short order, which, by the way, points to the importance, at least, of holding this Senate.
Yes. Yes. Dr. Al Moeller, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. As always, great to have a conversation with you. And again, congratulations on your election today.
Thank you, Tony. It's always good to be with you. We'll be in the fight together.
Absolutely.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I want to encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.